What did the ancient prophets have to say about the subject of worship? Hello, I'm Dave Thomas. This is Good Word. Welcome. Thanks for joining us again this week in our discussion on the subject of worship, a discussion that's going on now. This is the ninth week. I am happy to have my same two conversation partners, Alden Thompson and Pedrito Maynard Reed. Both of these gentlemen are accomplished professors here at Walla Walla University. And gentlemen, today this lesson asks us to look at what the prophets, particularly the major prophets, have to say about worship. And maybe just out of interest's sake, what's the difference between a major and a minor prophet? Do you want to help us with that one?
Major prophets are fat and the minor prophets are skinny.
Now, you'll have to interpret that a little bit. You're talking about the size of their writings, right?
Yeah, that really would apply to their writings, not the size of the prophet himself.
So the prophets that had fat writings were major ones, and the ones that had skinny writings were the minor ones.
So you had the major prophets going up to Daniel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel. And then the minor ones follow that.
Typically, Daniel belongs in a category by himself. And in the Jewish community, they put the 12 minor ones together as one book.
Oh, okay.
So that then becomes comparable to, so you have Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the 12.
Mm-hmm. Now, I find these ancient prophets fascinating. They are a different breed. They are given to very graphic and powerful language. I sometimes compare them to firemen who show up at your house and you're sitting there at the breakfast table not realizing that the house is on fire, and they don't ring the doorbell. They crash through with their axe and drag you out hollering and screaming. You don't know why until you get outside. And so, you know, when I saw the lesson here asking us to contemplate what the prophets have to say about worship, my mind immediately thought, well, it's probably going to be fairly dramatic and fairly, what word do I want? In other words, this is not going to be comfortable listening where everybody's going to just sing a little hallelujah song. It's going to be in your face.
I could press that a bit further, David. Sometimes the prophets not only come to drag you out of the house that you don't know is on fire, my suspicion is that sometimes they set the house on fire.
No, it's so true. You know, and to show the cultural nature of this, in Britain, a few decades ago, there was a big race riot there, and a lot of people got killed.
Where was that?
In London.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And lots of people got killed. On Sunday morning, in the black churches, all the black preachers preached from the prophets.
Wow.
All the white churches preached from the Gospels.
And which being interpreted is
calm. Let's be peaceful. Let's love one another.
And the other one was fire.
It was fire. Judgment of God is going to come down, and they're just preaching because the prophets are very fiery. Yeah. You know, so if you want to preach fiery sermons, I am not quite sure most worship services would be happy with prophetic preaching today. I think we come to church saying we're tired. We want calm. You give us peace. In some other places.
But I heard a preacher say one day that if you're going to preach, when you get in the pulpit, you have to fight a little bit, he said. You have to fight, which is what the prophets did.
In the African-American churches, they feel that if you haven't stirred somebody's soul, maybe even offend a person or two, you really haven't preached.
So given this little interlude here, Jeremiah 7 is a very interesting one. Any comments you want to make on that one here? Jeremiah talks about how people indulge the right rituals and go to the right places and repeat the right sequence of words, and they give the right offerings.
Well, we talked about that several weeks ago, Dave. And it's,
we can talk about it again because people have forgotten by now.
Well, if we were a prophet, we might talk about it again. But it's, in Isaiah 1 is a very similar message. It's perhaps even fiery where God says, I won't even listen to your prayers. You know, had enough of this stuff.
So
both of those are just very strident.
You know, Jeremiah 7 verse 4 intrigues me because it almost involves mocking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty tough stuff when you do that.
Prophets mock. I sometimes say if I was to preach in some churches today, they would never want me back because preach like that.
You make fun of them, yeah.
You make fun. Even we didn't get to go, I think it was last week, to talk about Elijah on Mount Carmel.
Yeah, he makes fun of the prophet.
He mocked the prophet, the Baal prophets. He even asked them and said, hey, your God may be using the bathroom, you know, reading Newsweek. Yeah. Why they
maybe
can't
he's
answer.
Gone on vacation. He's gone on maybe vacation. He's gone to sleep.
He's
yeah.
sleeping. That was total mockery. you know.
And that's calculated to build up a lot of anger in somebody.
You build up anger in them. And that's the prophetic way of bringing attention. Now, I'm not saying we must do that today, although I can tell you, that my black students here many times say they miss their churches back home in the inner city because the sermons are too calm. They mm-hmm. want some fire and brimstone sermon. And I say, but you know, too much fire and brimstone sermon can chase people out of the church.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so, but.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Jeremiah is that he was so pointed that he was forbidden even to come on the temple grounds. And chapter 36 of Jeremiah tells about how he sent a message through Baruch because I said, I can't go there.
Forbidden.
Forbidden. I can think here at the University Church, for instance. Alex preaches such a powerful sermon that the conference says you can't come anymore. So he sends a message to his wife, through his wife, and she stands in the foyer and said, this is what my husband had to say to you. He can't come. He's not allowed. That was Jeremiah's story.
That's right.
And what happened, you see, and this is the thing why it's so difficult to predict the message of the prophets. Isaiah, when he served under Hezekiah, he had the privilege of supporting the king Hezekiah and saying, resist these guys, don't give in.
Yeah, because the king was not given to wickedness, yeah.
But when you come to Jeremiah, it's just the opposite. It said, no, give in, go into captivity, learn your lesson. Well, that's high treason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And even the composition of the book of Jeremiah we have is really fascinating because the last chapter of Jeremiah is actually a parallel from the last chapter of Kings. It's as if those who put together the book said, you know, these people need to know that Jeremiah preached the truth, and we're going to put on the last chapter of 2 Kings here, which tells about the destruction of Jerusalem. Jeremiah was right, and you need to read the history.
See? Wow.
So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what is it about worship that really made the prophets apoplectic, if I can use that word? I mean, what
they were abusing the poor, the needy, and still cheerfully coming to church and saying everything's just fine.
And so go ahead.
No, I said social justice is so important to the prophets. You know, I remember back in Jamaica when some pastors came to me and said, what are you teaching your students at West Indies College so much social justice for? They're coming out and preaching that. I said, have you ever gone to the prophets and counted up the sins that God condemned? The number one sin is idolatry.
Yeah. Number two
is oppression.
Yeah.
And they were all righteous with idolatry and with oppression and still doing the rituals. God was so condemning of that, and the prophets got very, very angry. You know, the Isaiah 58, where they talk about false and true worship, they were doing all the fasting in the traditional sense. And he says, I don't want that fast. You fast, you quarrel and fight. You just look at some of our people. This is Sabbath for fasting, but they're talking, backbiting each other at the same time. And he says, to strike the wicked with fists, this fasting that you do today, make your voices heard on high. Is that the fast I choose? To humble oneself? He said, I don't want that type of worship, this humility, bowing down yourself like a bulrush, lion sackcloth and ashes. You call that a fast? You call that acceptable? Even God was getting angry. He says, the fast that I choose is to loose the bond of injustice, undo the thongs of the yoke, let the oppressed go free, break every yoke, share your bread with the hungry, and bring the homeless poor into your house. When you see the naked, you cover them and not hide your sin from your own kin. When we see homeless people, we say they are lazy. We blame them for everything. Isaiah says, that is what I want you to do. Not blaming them, but taking care of them. I don't want your worship. I want justice.
So help me connect this social justice and worship theme, though.
Well, let me read a little snippet here from Amos. Now, he's in one of the minor prophets, But he's just very potent, and especially since we've talked about worship and music and so on. Chapter 7, I despise your festivals and take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. And the offerings of your well-being, of your fatted animals, I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps.
The noise of your songs.
The noise of your songs, the melody of your harps.
Mm-hmm.
But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream.
So I'm still trying to get somebody to articulate what's the connection between worship and these things. I mean, why
cannot have true worship with the traditional rituals if this is the lifestyle that you're having. It's not so much the worship as your lifestyle. Worship and lifestyle come hand in hand together. For us, the lifestyle that we want in worship, at least my generation, is that you come dressed a certain way to church and that you sit quietly in church and you
so
don't
talk.
You can
talk, be robbing and pilfering as long as you come in your suit.
That is exactly right. And that's what they were doing back then. And God says...
And that's what God finds particularly reprehensible.
Totally reprehensible.
Because it's a masquerade? Because it denies His goodness? Why is God so upset with that?
Of course. You see, because this is not who I am. God says, I am on the side of the widow and the orphans.
Yeah.
I take care of the lowest of society. The civility of a society is how much it takes care of the weakest member of its society.
And it's amazing in the New Testament, if I can transgress on your ground here, Pedro.
Thank you. I like when you come over.
When Jesus summarizes things, he doesn't even talk about the first command, loving God. He says, in everything, treat others the way you'd want to be treated. This is the law and the prophets. Galatians 5, the same thing. So,
and the parable of the sheep and the goats, where it seems to hinge on
what you've done.
What you've done.
Yeah. To the least of these.
Yeah.
And in all of these, they're talking about the least of these. Yeah. In James chapter 2, 1 verse 27, true religion before God is this, to take care of the widow and the orphan, the least in the society.
Yeah.
That was true religion.
So people who are involved in wrongdoing and injustice really cannot worship then. Is that what we're saying?
They will worship, but it will be profane worship.
Yeah.
Profane. Even though the form is right, it's profane in God's sight.
Yeah.
And of course, Sermon on the Mount, same thing. Did we not do many wonderful things in your name?
That's right.
Never knew you. Never knew you.
It's challenging because to me, when I talk about worship, I have to ask those questions. Am I coming for the form of it every time I go to church on Sabbath or Sunday morning?
Yeah. And so Jesus, he said, if you're going to the temple and you remember that your brother has something against you, go take care of the essence of things and then worship will be pure. Yeah.
And he says, you pay tithe, the mint, anise, and cumin.
Yeah.
But neglect the weightier matters.
Matthew 23:23.
Yeah.
Powerful text.
So the weightier matters must precede us. Well, that was our little excursion into the prophets. Thank you, gentlemen. I felt some fire in that one. And so thanks for being here, for being involved here. Our thanks to Chad Oftahar, our engineer. And thanks to you, our audience, for good word. I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.